Offshore Explorer Podcast. Back at ya. This is your host, Chase Offield. Been on a little break. Been trying to do some fishing. And the fishing's been pretty nuts the last few weeks here. Those big bluefin seemed like they were taking off. And then they kind of settled in out on the Tanner Bank zone. There was a 414 or so pound fish caught last week that kind of made the rounds and got everyone fired back up to do the offshore thing again. And seems like the tuna fishing down in that zone on the Tanner Bank and around there is really good on the big ones. And then a little bit further south off San Diego, seems like there's a fair amount of the smaller grade yellowfin and bluefin also mixed in, and still some Dorado on the patties. And, you know, the water's 74 degrees still offshore. So we're having kind of a Indian summer here, and the fishing's still pretty epic. The marlin fishing's definitely slowed down, but everything else is still pretty firing. So I want to tell you guys about my trip with the scientist from Pier. Did a 2-day satellite tagging trip with those guys on their research boat, the Malolo, and got pretty lucky to wind up landing that fish. I did everything in my power to lose the fish, but you know, sometimes you just, the stars align and you get lucky, and that's fishing. I mean, you can do everything right and lose fish. This was one of those rare times where did a lot of things wrong and wound up getting the fish. And it was definitely one of the most satisfying fishing experiences in my life. Something I've wanted to do for a long time, and definitely up there in probably my top five fishing experiences, and was just really stoked that it all came together in the end. But yeah, let's first start off with the solo sword. I was headed to Catalina with my family, and for like a 4-day trip, and my plan was to fish all 4 mornings. So whether I got a fish or not, I would put in 4 days. And fishing right out of Avalon is pretty easy for the deep drop deal, because you can choose from, you know, a bunch of spots along that 1,000-foot drop off that runs along the entire front side of the island there. And there's a bunch of spots. So that Friday morning, I'm headed out. There was a high tide at like 9:15. I got going at around 8 and left the harbor. My plan was to kind of just go straight out to this little zone there right out in front of Avalon, and headed out there and got to the area where I wanted to start. And there was somebody kind of set up in the zone where I thought about wanting to fish, and decided I didn't want to, you know, be around any other boats. Just because I think with the deep dropping, if you're able to get your setup kind of away from everyone else and have your lights, you know, be the only thing around, probably increases your odds. So decided to bail on that spot and check out another spot where I've caught a fish before. And started working my way over there. And as I got closer, I saw a little skiff deep dropping, like literally right on my numbers. And I was thinking, you know, it was pretty bummed because it was AVOL, it was a Friday morning, so there shouldn't have been a lot of guys out fishing. But the first two spots I went to had guys already set up. So got the gyros out and glassed up the 152 and didn't see any boats over there. So decided to go give that a look. And as I got close to the zone, close to the high spot there, the sonar immediately started picking up a real nice bait ball at about 850 feet. And, you know, it was different than the normal bait and scatter layer, you know, you're used to seeing at that depth, where, you know, a lot of times it'll be that, you know, blue fuzz. This was like, you know, an orange, red, like very concentrated kind of bait ball. And I just felt, you know, like this is a good place to drop. So I quickly grabbed a bait, started stitching it up. And when I was stitching up the squid, the thing was like oozing this like real thick, greasy orange oil. And I was like, dude, this bait's gonna get bit. Like, it just felt like, you just get that feeling sometimes, like, you know, that everything's gonna line up. And the bait ball, the bait, it just felt super juicy. So got it rigged up, had the black leader, the black LP 300 pound leader, which a lot of guys that I fish with swear by having that black leader. I don't know if it makes a difference, but you know, anything that maybe like increases your odds a little bit, I'm all for that. So threw on two diamond lights. And then I had, two big LP lights, off the weight, and that I like that the fast multi-changing disco big on the big lights. Had two of those cranking, and then I was fishing like a long wind on, like one of those like 100-foot wind ons. So not an IGFA legal setup or tuna club legal, but was just out there trying to get a fish. And so started getting the rig out and got to my 1,000-foot mark, and the bait was like making its way down. And right as it like must have been passing through that bait ball, the rod tip started twitching. And I was like, I was pretty close to the bottom. So I was, for a minute, I thought maybe I'd hit bottom. And I reeled up a little bit and let it sit, and you know, I knew it wasn't on the bottom anymore and knew I was getting bit by a sword. So I decided to just let him eat for a minute, and then reeled up really fast, dropped the weight, reeled up really fast, dropped the weight. He was still there, and that's when I decided to start cranking on him, and got my rod belt on, and just started bringing him up. And the fish did what you know, a lot of these fish do, and he just started swimming up with the weight. And midway through, I wasn't sure if he was still there, because it was just like cranking up the weight and couldn't really feel anything else. So I was starting to get a little bit worried that he'd fallen off, and just kept cranking. And pretty soon I got to the beginning of the wind on and cranked it all the way up to the weight and decided to not take the weight off because I'd only been on the fish for about 5-10 minutes. And if he took off, a lot of guys have, you know, told me that if you keep the weight on, the fish winds up fighting that weight and, you know, they won't do like a lot of big deep dives and you're just going to have an easier job getting them in the long run. So that came back to haunt me later on, but on this first, you know, 8-10 minutes into the fight, I decided to leave the weight on, set the rod down, grab the leader and started kind of just pulling the leader in easy and wasn't even sure the fish was there, but the leader was out towards the surface. And pretty soon I felt the fish and he was just kind of laying there and the sun was just coming up and he was just all lit up broadside to the sun. And I was like, oh, you know, that's a nice fish. And that led to my first time getting lucky. I didn't lose the fish because he decided to swim right at the boat. And I was, you know, pulling in the line, leadering him in and just trying to go as fast as I could as the fish swam towards the boat. And what I should have done was had thrown the boat into forward, but, you know, I just kind of like wasn't thinking and the fish swam right under the boat and there was nothing I could do. And luckily he was swimming kind of down at enough of an angle that I was able to reach out as far as I could. And the leader just barely must have cleared the port props because he somehow swam under and to the side of the port props and swam off without getting tangled up. So that was my first time getting lucky. So I kind of just like let the leader, you know, go through my hands with keeping some tension on and let him go and let him go till he started taking drag again, eased off the drag and let him just kind of swim off because I had to like regroup. I was like, okay, that was sketchy. I need to, you know, have a better plan. And I had my flying gaff ready to go tied off on the starboard corner. And then I had a regular stick gaff kind of ready to go in the middle. And so let him go. He kind of just swam off slowly, pull and drag. And, you know, I didn't really like want him to just crank him right back to the boat. I thought I'd better let him like, you know, burn off a little bit of energy. So he swam off for a bit and about 20 minutes later, I started gaining on him pretty steady and got back to the weight again. And this time I should have took the weight off and just kept winding the wind on all the way up to the swivel. But made a dumb mistake and left the weight on again. And that wound up causing me all kinds of problems because as I was leadering this fish the second time, the leader started getting all balled up in the corner of the boat and getting wrapped around the weight. So I figured like, okay, I better get this fish now or I'm going to have a full mess on my hands. And, was pulling on him. He was pulling pretty hard. And, but I was able to like, you know, get him towards the boat and he kind of, you know, made a move at trying to go into the props again, but was able to like, kind of like get him around the corner. And, he came out from under the corner side of the boat and up like bill up and then kind of like to the side, and I would quickly grab the gaff with one hand and reached and was trying to get him in the back, but kind of whiffed on my first gaff attempt. And all that was left was the tail. So I just went for it and got him right in the meat of the base of the tail on his big, that big meaty tail that these swordfish have. And I knew I was, going to be fucked, but I didn't really have a choice. So got him in the tail and he was hooked okay, or the gaff was in okay, and got his tail out of the water. And at first he was like not going mental. So I quickly I had to walk around the back of the boat all the way to the other corner to get the flying gaff. And I'm pulling him. And I get to where I can reach the flying gaff. So I had one hand on the stick gaff. And now he was starting to go, kicking and going mental. I grabbed the flyer with my left hand and reached over. And the thing was just thrashing around at this point. And as I reached to sink the flyer, he did like one huge kick and ripped the stick gaff out of my hand. And I went and lunged and tried to get him again with the flying gaff, but he was already like too deep and he just started swimming off. And I grabbed the leader with both hands and held it up, and it was just a big rat's nest ball of leader. And I thought what had happened was I'd cut the leader with the barb or the flying gaff, and that was it. I thought the fish was gone. And I was just kind of standing there like, just in shock. Like, I can't believe I just did that. And I looked down and I noticed one little strand of leader was kind of like going in the water. And I quickly grabbed it and pulled up and I was like, oh, he's there. And I was holding on and he just freaking took off. And I was like, oh shit. And I had this big mess of leader and I just was like, screw it. And just threw the whole wad of leader over the side of the boat. At this point, it was all I could do. And, I just hoped that it would hold. And he took off again. This time he was pissed. I don't think he liked getting gaffed in the tail, and decided to bomb straight down, took off a couple hundred feet of line. And now I was down. I had one of my brand new Merita gaffs was out floating in the water. I pulled the flying gaff back into the boat and was like, okay, it would be nice to have somebody else help me gaff this fish now. And, I put out a call on the radio, and at first no one came back. And then I put out another call and I got a comeback, which I wound up finding out later was Ryan Lawler on one of the, on his whale watching boats, was offshore and was going to come by and help. But a few minutes later, luckily, my good friend Bobby Lee had seen me pulling on the fish. I guess he had been in the area, had come into the 152 while I was fighting the fish and saw what was going on. And he wound up being able to get dropped off on the boat and pulled another gaff out from the V-berth. And we settled in to fighting the fish. And now the fish was like fully acclimated to the warmer water, to being up on the surface. And he was pulling like a real sword. None of this like hypoxia blindedness that these swords get when they first come up to the top. And it's when you can kind of nab them before they know what's going on. This guy was like, now he was fully acclimated and was, ready to do war. So wound up taking like another hour, of cranking on him. and got to the leader a couple times, but he was just like pissed and we weren't really able to do anything. But eventually, he tired out a little bit. Bobby Lee got on the leader and, was able to kind of like dog walk him up and, got a good gaff shot on him the second time. And, we got a tail rope around it and, that was it. And, you know, the fish was dead and, was super stoked. You know, it was one of the most, you know, intense fishing angling feats I think you can do is to try and get one of those things solo. You know, mine wasn't totally solo because I got help at the end, but, that hour and a half before Bobby Lee was on the boat, you know, you really can see, you know, just how gnarly these fish are. I was reading a couple days later, I was reading one of my dad's old Zane Grey books about swordfish. And he talks about, back then where they didn't consider it sporting to attempt to take a swordfish, like in the first half hour to hour of the fight, because, you know, the fish hadn't fully warmed up yet and it wasn't sporting. It wasn't like a full respect of the fish, to attempt to take him at that point in the fight. And it was kind of looked down on then. And, you know, I'm definitely like not above attempting to take a fish at any point in the fight when you get a chance to do it. But I definitely also saw in this battle, the different like stages of that fish, getting acclimatized to being back on the surface, from coming up from the bottom. And, he started off really docile. And if there had been a couple guys on the boat, we would have been easily able to kill that fish that first time he came up. The second time I got him up also would have been dead. And, you know, to be honest, I probably should have finished the deal there. I botched the gaff. And if I would have been able to just whack him right then with the flyer, that would probably have been it. But after that second go through, then he was fully like heated up and it was on. And that thing was like pulling like 200% harder than he had been like the first 45 minutes of the fight. I mean, it was like not even like the same, not even the same animal. It went like full, just badass, pure muscle, got his shoulders set and was just pig dogging. And there was like, you know, I had like some heavy drag and that thing was like just not budging. So really interesting to see, you know, that like transformation of like how those fish, as they acclimate to the warmer water, the difference in the temperature, the sunlight, all that, how they like their body chemistry, you know, changes and they, you know, they just get stronger and stronger, I think, as it goes on. So that was cool. Got the fish into Avalon and was able to have my wife and son come down for some pictures. Caleb from the Lobster Trap came down and helped me process the fish and get him cleaned up outside the harbor there. And then was cool enough to let me store the fish in his walk-in freezer on the pier there at Rosie's. So I was able to let the fish sit overnight and let that meat really firm up and just get, you know, perfect. And, you know, I'm definitely biased, but the swordfish that are caught on Catalina or around Catalina just taste different. They taste insane. They're so juicy and they have like just the cleanest flavor. It makes all the like hassle worth it. And was just so stoked to be able to pass out some of that fish to some friends on the island. Caleb had his chef down at the Lobster Trap whip up a meal for us one night. So killer experience. Would definitely do some things different next time. Would definitely have more gaffs ready and set up ahead of time. Going with just two gaffs was kind of a mistake because I had like five gaffs on the boat. Another thing I would do is have like a 4 foot, 3 or 4 foot, just like short gaff ready. That was like, you could kind of like easily maneuver for like a second backup gaff. So if you whacked him with the 8 footer first, yeah, that four footer, you could kind of just get down and just get like another hook in him. And then you got like two hands, like, would make it way easier to kind of like, hang on. That's something I'm going to do next time, for sure. The other thing is, you know, if you're going to do it, definitely take the weight off. I understand all the logic on leaving the weight on, but it wound up like totally fucking me up. And I probably would have had a way easier time getting that fish if I'd just taken the weight off the first go round. And even if it, like, you know, had turned into a really long fight, it wouldn't have like cost me the possibility of getting the leader tangled up and all that. And I think it also would have been easier just to kind of to maneuver the fish around the boat off the rod tip versus like trying to do it leader, you know, with the leader in my hands. And so those two things are the biggest things: more gaffs and take the weight off and just wind up all the way to the swivel. And that was pretty much it. Oh, I didn't run a skirt. And I used a 11-aught black 11-aught Jobu J hook, and I put a little bit of an offset on it. I wish you could buy some offset hooks that were like for just for sword fishing. I haven't been able to find them, so you gotta like get the hook in a vise and just kind of crank on it yourself. But having that offset definitely helps. And the fish was like hooked really good, right, like in the throat bones, like at the bottom of the throat, like through those like rakers, and the freaking hook was not coming out. So I was stoked on that. I know, like, when I went out for this satellite tagging trip, the buoy set gears guys all use circle hooks. But they use circle hooks because they have to use circle hooks. Because if they catch a elephant, seal, or, you know, whatever bycatch, they have to, be able to release the fish. So, I definitely like a proponent of the J hook. The other thing is too, with like the hooks, obviously with like, if you get a good hook set with a circle hook, like chances are you're going to land the fish. With a J hook, you're going to foul hook a few fish, but you're not going to foul hook a fish with a circle. So at the end of the day, it's like a catch 22 where you might get one or two fish, bonus fish that were snagged, but you also might lose one or two fish that were snagged. But I think like at the end of the day, the extra percentile of ones you're going to get with the J hook, like you're going to hook more fish with the J hook, period. But you might also lose more fish. And I think you got to go with like the odds of hooking more fish versus landing more fish. Because I mean, at the end of the day, you're just out there to, you know, to do battle. If you're not hooking them, you know, what's the point? You might have a couple heartbreak fish, but at least you're in the game that way. And also like, I think offset your hooks, you know, take the extra time to put that thing in a vise and, you know, wrench on it a little bit and put that offset, because I think that increases the hooks like effectiveness too, on like just, you know, getting hooked anywhere that comes in contact with that fish. And yeah, you know, the black leader, I don't know if it does anything, but that LP black leader that I was able to get off their website has worked good for me. It's got me a lot of bites, and I know the guys that swear by it. So, check out that black leader. All right. So that was that. And super stoked, already like frothing to, go back out again and, do some more sword fishing. I wound up giving away like all the swordfish. I ate swordfish for like a week straight, and I don't have any left. So in a little bit, I'm going to start fishing again, and I'd probably like to have a chance to get one more this season and probably call it quits after that. I mean, they're just so damn good to eat. I want to get some more. So the second part of this podcast, I want to focus on my trip with the guys from Pier. I was out with Chuggy and Scooch, who are like the two main scientists at Pier, which is the Flager Institute of Environmental Research out of Oceanside, and their assistant, Mikey. We left Oceanside last week on Monday morning. And it was a 2-day trip, and we were going to try and do some swordfish tagging and also some striped marlin tagging. And we've been working on developing a spot tag for striped marlin that can last over a year. And what a spot tag is a tag that you like surgically attached to either the tail or the dorsal of a fish. And anytime that fish breaks the surface, the little wire on the tag uploads or pings to the satellite. So you're able to get like a real time, location update on the fish. Whereas a satellite tag, you know, you tag the fish, say it's a 9-month tag. After 9 months, that tag detaches and floats to the surface and then uploads all the data then. The spot tag lets you kind of follow the fish in real time and give you updates like as the fish is moving versus like just at the end. The problem is we did a bunch of spot tagging on striped marlin about 10, 12 years ago. And we attached the tags to the tail of the striped marlin. And we were only able to get 2 or 3 weeks off those tags before the marlin, just from the, you know, the ferocity of their tail beating and how fast they swim, like they were shedding the tags. So we were only able to see kind of like the first couple weeks after we tagged the fish, what they did. And that was cool because it had never been done. So it was cool to just to see like how fast those fish bailed on this area once they were caught. I mean, we would tag a fish off Catalina and like by the next day it was below the border. And that was the case for most of the tags, if I recall. But I mean, those things can just book like, you know, 50 to 100 miles in a day. And, you know, it's like, makes you wonder, like, when those fish are coming through here, if they're just passing through, or how often or how long some of the fish are hanging out, or what the deal is. So that's the whole idea behind the spot tag, is to kind of see daily updates on what the fish is doing. Anyhow, the new tag we developed, we were putting on, the idea was to put it on the dorsal fin, and we were able to get some dorsal, striped marlin dorsal fins and do some practicing in the lab and seeing like that first dorsal bone on a striped marlin is pretty big. And if you can get the screw or the drill through those bones and zip tie through two different holes in the bones, we're pretty like sure that that thing's like not going to get shed. So we developed this tag and we set out, and we were, the plan was to do the deep drop sets. And then while we were waiting for swordfish to bite, troll around for marlin. So we were pretty like confident we were going to get several swordfish, but we weren't very confident on the marlin. Just because the marlin fishing last week or the last few weeks has been pretty sparse. So we headed out. We wound up making our swordfish set. And right early on as we started fishing, we had a marlin up and piled on the right rigger. And didn't get hooked, got a couple dropbacks, and the fish was like really weird. He was just kind of chilling behind the boat, but he didn't want nothing to do with the dropbacks, which is really rare. Usually when you have a fish behind the boat, striped marlin, and you get a dropback back, you're going to get a bite like 90% of the time at least. And he wanted nothing to do with our live baits. And he chilled behind the boat for a minute, and then he was out and sunk out, and we wound up not getting a bite. Pretty bummed. You know, we weren't super optimistic about catching marlin. So to get that bite early on, like, got us fired up. We wound up trolling around the rest of the day and not seeing anything, metering some bait, but not seeing any really surface stuff. Right before sunset, though, way out back, out the middle of the stinger, was a pink and orange, like petrolero. I can never say that word. Pacula, soft head, thing just piled on it and screamed offline, like just like crazy. And, wound up like peeling off like 300, 400, 500 feet of line. Not even more than that, like maybe like 600 feet of line. And It was like a bluefin rig. So it was like straight spectra. And dude, a jig fish with straight spectra is not the way to go. There's no stretch. So this thing was like just going nuts, doing crazy window wiping, head shakes. And I don't know how we freaking landed the fish. I eased off the drag way back and was able to get the fish in about like, I don't know, 15 minutes. Chuggy grabbed the bill and we brought him around and it was pretty darn rough at this point. And we had to keep the fish in the water while we were putting on the tag. It was kind of a cluster because it was so rough and it was really difficult getting that tag on. But eventually we did get the tag on and the fish swam off. I was able to get some GoPro footage of the fish swimming off and the tag looked super clean. So any day now we should be getting some transmissions from that tag. Hopefully if the fish, you know, survived and wasn't like, you know, messed up by a Mako or anything, we should start getting, some data from that fish, in the next few days. So we're super pumped to see, hopefully that fish lived, hopefully the tag's working. Part of the deal with tagging pelagic fish is, you know, a lot of times things go wrong. You get faulty tags, fish die, fish get, you know, eaten by sharks. Lots of things can go wrong, but we're hoping that we start to get some info back from the striped marlin in the next couple of days. If the tag works and it stays on, we'll be the first striped marlin ever with one of these long term spot tags, and we'll get some incredible data, stuff that's never been collected from a striped marlin before. So pretty stoked to be involved in that process. And we have a few more that we're going to try and get out. It's obviously getting late in the marlin season, but we're going to give it a couple more attempts and hopefully we'll get out one or two more of those tags. So that was really cool. On the swordfish front, we lost a fish the first day. And then the second day, you know, all the buoy gear swordfish boats were all kind of in the same zone. And saw the other boats get a couple nice fish, but we had run out of luck. I think we used it all up on getting that stripey. And we wound up not tagging any swordfish on that trip. So kind of bummed we didn't get to tag any swords, but super stoked that we were able to tag the one striped marlin. And yeah, just keeping my fingers crossed that that fish survived the ordeal of getting the spot tag put on its dorsal, and we start to get some info back on that fish any day now. Gonna head out this afternoon and do an afternoon deep drop with Bob Hoos on Prospector. Just gonna be an observer and maybe help gaff if we get one. But yeah, it's shaping up to be a really good season. You know, the guys are still whacking the bluefin, but pretty soon it's going to be transitioning into just kind of the deep drop time. And, you know, there's been a steady pick at them. I think, you know, like one or two a weekend. And but we haven't even gotten into the prime time yet. This next month will be that prime time. So I think, you know, we should start seeing a little bit more activity from the deep drop guys. And, you know, hopefully all you guys get out there and are able to pull on one this year. Yeah. So hope to see everyone out there. Hope you enjoyed the story about my solo sword, I guess solo with an asterisk. And thanks for listening, and hope to see you guys all out fishing soon. All right.